Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the Brain Sensing Headband, and Meditation Studio, the 5-Star app. I'm Patricia Karpis. Don't forget to check out the hundreds of free meditations on Meditation Studio app. Find out more at choosemuse.com/meditationstudio. Today's guest is Chris Winter. Chris is a neurologist, sleep specialist, and author of the book, The Sleep Solution: Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It. He explains why we're a culture of poor sleepers and how we got that way, and includes 5 things we can do right now to improve our sleep. Spoiler alert, an attitude change might be the best tactic of all. Now, here's Chris. We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Chris, it's great to have you on Untangle today. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Patricia. I appreciate it.
I want to start by asking you this question. As a neurologist, how did you originally become so interested in sleep and the problems that we all have with sleep?
The short answer is it was all very accidental, but there's just something kind of intoxicating about sleep that's very easy to have fun with.
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's good news, bad news, right? Because people love to talk about sleep because we have so many challenges with it. If
Correct.
It were simple, hey.
Like the spleen. The spleen's a piece of cake.
Yeah, exactly.
Water, right? Hell, you can take it out if you want to. It's not even necessary.
Exactly. But you can't like not sleep.
That's
so
right.
Let's talk about
that's
that
important. That's an important sentence right there you just said.
Yeah. And I mean, I personally have had sleep problems forever. So I'm super excited about getting some of this information. And I did love your book, although I'm still not sleeping perfectly, but I'm still not doing all the things I'm supposed to be doing. So that's fair. But why do so many of us have sleep challenges to begin with?
There's a couple answers to that. One is, I think that for the first time, we have generations now that are looking at sleep as a modifiable variable and not a trait.
Okay, you're going to have to say more about that. What does that mean?
So what I mean by that is, I think that probably in the past, if you slept poorly, you just kind of slept poorly. You didn't really think much of it.
Yeah.
And now with the idea that sleep is its own science, there's all kinds of things you can do. You can alter the lighting. You can do a sleep study to determine if there's something wrong with your sleep versus there's nothing I can do about the fact that I'm short, have sort of big ears, and have green eyes. Like those things are traits. I can't fix those. I don't know, maybe 100 years from now, they won't be. And you can choose your own height. You can easily genetically alter your eye color. This has now come into this idea that sleep is a science, not just a sort of a casual observation. Mm-hmm. I also think there's a lot more out there that is impacting our sleep. We're a 24-hour culture now. We're always awake. We're a shift work culture. We can eat whenever we want to. We can watch Game of Thrones starting right now until sometime at the end of next week, one episode after another. These were not things that we had. The cell phone is a huge issue with this right now. Our access to information and all these things were not a problem in the past. It was sort of boring to stay up all night when you were living in a cabin that had a whale fat lantern and Papa's fiddle on the wall. Like, that was it. There was nothing to really do. And you worked really hard all day while you had sunlight. So there were things that kind of naturally regulated our sleep a lot better than what we have right now, not to mention the chemicals we put in our body, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that there's a lot of excitement about technology and moving into the future, but there's also some drawbacks, particularly when it comes to a biological organism that probably wasn't meant to do a lot of the things it's doing right now.
When you talk about binge watching Game of Thrones or cell phones, do you think that these, let's call it addiction, or even the lure of these entertainment options, are these causing more insomnia in our culture right now? Or how do you see that connection?
Yeah, I think it's really important right off the bat to define what insomnia is, just so we're all very clear. I've got a bunch of slideshows that I've done for people. One of my favorite slides is a series of headlines that have come out over the last few years. And they literally go, and they're like from Forbes magazine and very reputable sources, why 40 million Americans can't sleep. And the next one's from the New York Times. It says 50 million Americans can't sleep, and here's why. When we're talking about insomnia, we're not talking about people who can't sleep. That doesn't exist. And that's a very important thing to say, that there are people out there who are dissatisfied with their sleep, have certain drawbacks or obstacles they're trying to overcome, but nobody out there can't sleep. And it's important because that's what most people associate in their mind with the idea of insomnia. Well, insomnia, I know what that is. That's when somebody can't sleep. And that's not what insomnia is. Insomnia really is more of an individual who is not sleeping in a way they want to or at a time they want to. They've gone to bed at 11 o'clock and it's taken them 2 hours to fall asleep. They've woken up at 2 a.m. and it's taking them an hour or two to get back to sleep. So part one is you're not sleeping in the way you want to. Part two is you have to have a negative emotional response to it. Meaning if I meet somebody who says, it takes me 2 hours to fall asleep, my next question is always, how do you feel about that? And if the individual says, oh, I don't really mind. I kind of like lying in bed awake, thinking about my day, planning out my weekend, figure out what to do for my wife for our anniversary, thinking about my celebrity crush, you know, whatever it is, it takes the emotional upset to really create insomnia. You have to care. So does Game of Thrones create more insomnia? Probably, but it also creates the flip side of insomnia. So when you're looking at the people that we treat in our clinic, we treat, I can't sleep. We also treat, I can't stay awake. And to me, the 24-hour technology, the bigger danger of those two complaints is, I can't stay awake. Because I should have gone to bed last night at 11 o'clock, but wow, the dragons have gone missing and I really know what happened to them. So I stayed up and watched another episode of it. Then I checked my email. Then I went to bed and I had to be up at 6 o'clock for a meeting. So to me, the sleep deprivation that we're putting ourselves through is a much bigger problem than insomnia, which is a really very different beast and often much more of a problem within a patient's mind than it is in terms of affecting their health. Because believe it or not, most insomnia patients are getting a normal amount of sleep, if not more than normal. They just don't feel it.
Is the first category that you're talking about, would you call it like sleep deprivation by choice?
Absolutely. Well, it's not by choice, but your verbiage is good. Meaning I work two jobs because if I don't, I can't pay my mortgage. So I have to work my day job and then I have to clean offices at night because if I don't have enough money. So right, it's a choice that they're deciding to stay up. They're deciding to take that extra job. And when you talk to these people and ask them, how's your sleep? Strangely, they'll often tell you, oh, sleep's great. Sleep's not a problem. Doctor, when I could lie down on your floor and go to sleep. So strangely, the individual who's not getting enough sleep by choice or by life circumstance or because you had triplets or something and they're up all night and you have no help, those individuals often feel like their life is a little out of control. But thank goodness their sleep is good because every time they get into bed or sit in their chair or park at a stoplight, they go right to sleep. It brings us to how do we judge good sleep or not? And one way we judge it is how quickly we fall asleep. And if you fall asleep really, really fast, that's great. And if you don't fall asleep really, really fast, that's a problem. Now, I don't ascribe to that belief that that's a good way to measure sleep, but a lot of people do. In fact, how many times have I heard somebody say, well, it takes me at least 30 minutes to fall asleep. And Harold over there, he's asleep before his head hits the pillow, like jealous, frustrated that Harold is such a good sleeper that he can fall asleep right away and it takes you all of 30 minutes. Where there's problems in that that are inherent.
So the sleep deprivation, there sounds like there's two categories. One is maybe it's not by choice, like you're saying, because people have two jobs and then it's actually easy for them to get to sleep because they're exhausted. And then there's this other group that is the binge watchers or the staying up with their technology or staying up to Absolutely. Do something that they maybe enjoy doing. And then they have to go to work at 6 or 7 in the morning and they feel sleep deprived, but they can't
Absolutely.
Stop their
Or they have to go to school. And you see that a lot in children. I will tell you, as a father of 3 kids, the biggest stress in our family is technology. It's not even close. And we're fine. There's no reason to feel sorry for us, but it is a constant struggle. The allure of that is, and even when they're trying to do the right thing with it, you're sabotaged by, well, their work is on the computer, but as they do the work in the corner, little texts keep popping up from their, you know, so it's yeah. just, so to me, you're right. There are kind of two different categories, and that is the real emergency that we're dealing with.
Yeah. And that in some ways sounds, I know this is probably hard for parents to hear, but it sounds somewhat controllable because you can change rules and change situations.
It is. Absolutely. The ones we see are often ultimately controllable because you controlled your son enough to, for you and your husband to come here to my clinic. But I guarantee you, my wife's a teacher.
Yeah.
He'll tell all the time, this kid falls asleep in my class every day. I know his mother has to work 2 jobs or work nights. So he's kind of on his own. And it's a lot to ask a young person. I mean, I think about myself in the position of, hey, Chris, do your homework and all this amazing technology where you could watch a movie anytime you wanted to. You can interact with your friends. You can find all kinds of cool things on cats playing the piano online. It's right here, but don't touch it. Please memorize your multiplication tables. That never would have happened. It's like eat your good food or eat candy.
Right, just, exactly.
It's not a fair fight for a 14-year-old's brain.
Yeah. So let's go back to insomnia. So you were talking about the negative emotional response to how you're feeling about your sleep or lack thereof. Were you saying that that's sort of the pivotal definition Absolutely. Of insomnia? Yeah. So what happens? Okay, so I either can't fall asleep or I'm waking up in the middle of the night. And is the moment where I'm not sleeping or can't go back to sleep defining whether I'm an insomniac or not, or how I'm reacting to that?
So my definition of insomnia is a little less academically rigorous than what you would find out. I find the definitions of insomnia kind of laughable. If it's more than 30 minutes or if it's more than a total of X, meaning that if it takes you 29 minutes to fall asleep and your life is falling apart, I have to say to you, you're fine. Like, that makes you sense. So the moment of insomnia, I don't think defines it. It really has to do with the attitude of it, meaning there's a lot of things that go into it. When we talk about insomnia, there's often a predisposition to it. What you see in insomnia are very successful people, very driven people who have a keen attention to detail, successful people. And what happens is all these traits that they possess, oh gosh, a problem came up in manufacturing. Let's talk to Linda about it. She'll get it all taken care of because she's so good at these kinds of problems. The good teacher, the good accountant, the person you want dealing with your brain surgery. When they start to apply that problem solving, that mental focus onto their sleep at night, it can become a real problem. So you've got this predisposed person. Most people with insomnia will have a precipitating event. I was doing fine, Dr. Winter, until Donald Trump got elected, until the divorce, until I lost my job, or something really trivial, until my fantasy football team lost in week 3. Like, it's amazing sometimes what people focus on. So this precipitating event happened and they had a tough night. So when I tell people all the time, sleep always wins. You're not in danger of not sleeping. What I mean by that is, in general, could you have a night where you were up all night? Of course. And we did it to ourselves purposefully in college. So what happens is you have a bad night. There are perpetuating factors after that bad night that determine whether or not you go back to sleeping well, or this becomes now a chronic thing where when you come to see me, you say something like, well, this thing happened and for the last 7 years, I just haven't been able to sleep. And to me, one of the things it starts with is that phrase, I haven't been able to sleep, because that's not what's going on. So if you're convincing yourself that the reason you're taking the pill, the reason you're doing whatever is because without it, you can't sleep, therein lies the problem. It's the fear, it's the anxiety about the situation that causes the situation. Meaning, I love when somebody comes in, I'm asking, what do you think started this problem you're having? I think it's the divorce. Oh, you're going through a divorce? No, that was 17 years ago. Really? Well, number one, forget her. She's never coming back. It's been 17 years. You got to move on with your life at this point. Number two, that's not the reason why tonight, Friday night, you're having trouble, the 17-year-old divorce. Something got put into play at that point, caused you to doubt your sleep, and here we are.
So are you saying these kinds of chronic sleep situations are psychological?
Many of them are.
Okay.
The vast majority of them are. Particularly, like, just saw a patient the other day. She is a professional trail runner. So what I always like to do is imagine me with a group of other doctors. So let's walk in and sit down. Before either of us say a word, I want to get the other doctor's impressions of this patient. And they would have said things like, appears healthy. Wow, looks much younger than her stated age. Clearly athletic, not in any acute distress. We can't tell what's wrong with her. Okay, let's start talking to her about it. And when you start talking to her about it, the picture that she's painting about this 7-year problem she's had with her sleep is extremely vivid and dramatic and kind of harrowing. Mm. It's been a nightmare situation, Dr. Winter. I've seen expert after expert. She provides me a list of 13 different pills she's taking. And she goes through the whole thing about how she can't sleep. And she's averaging about 2 hours of sleep at night. Her husband came with her. And when you're all done, it's interesting to ask them, okay, so what is the consequence of all of this been? And it's really difficult for them to put one down. What you often hear with the patient with insomnia are the F words. And the F word is not the F word we think about. We think about the F word. We think about, in sleep clinics, fear and function. And they'll tell you, this has made my functioning impossible. So what kind of work do you do? Oh, I'm a lawyer. So you had to stop your law practice? No, but it's not functioning well. Let me tell you something. You're functioning quite well. And for you to say you're not functioning, I think when you say functioning is a problem for you. So are you perfect? Are you hitting on all cylinders? Yeah, probably not. But let's get the function definition sort of set aside, because the other F word is fear. That is really the essential part of most patients' insomnia. You are going to bed fearing that if sleep doesn't work right now, you've gone to bed at 10 o'clock, it's got to happen now. And if you're awake until 11 o'clock, there is a fear that because of that, you won't be able to function the next day. And let me tell you right now, you're not falling asleep at 11 o'clock when you go to bed with that attitude. It's like somebody putting a gun to your head and saying, look, if you don't fall asleep in the next 15 to 30 minutes, I will shoot you. Yeah. Nobody could sleep under that circumstance. But that's the situation that a lot of people find themselves in. And so we want to really deconstruct what is sleep and understand that you can't avoid it. It's a runaway train. So it's really important for people to understand that there is no danger of not sleeping. Let's focus on the real problems that you're having with your sleep. You're waking up some at night. It takes you an hour or two to fall asleep. Because the great thing about that husband who came with my patient, he said at one point, she always talks about getting 2 hours of sleep, but I think she gets a lot more than that. Well, of course she does. Absolutely. But the panic and the fear that she's taken with her over the last 7 years makes her misperceive her sleep, which is a huge problem with patients who have insomnia. The information they are giving the doctor is not real information.
Well, she's probably remembering in the morning the times that she woke up several times during the night.
Absolutely. And absolutely. She's not trying to trick me. That is her perception. What I always tell insomnia patients is, look, you came here with a problem, and your problem was you can't sleep. The idea that you're going to bed at 9 o'clock, getting out of bed at 7, and you feel like you've only slept 1 to 2 hours every night, that's a huge problem. Like, part of the wonderful bargain with sleep is you should be able to get in bed, kiss your partner goodnight, set your clock, turn the light off, and the next thing you know, you're waking up to start your day. That's how sleep should work. Yours is not working that way, so we need to fix it. Now, you are sleeping. That Fitbit you bought and threw away because it, quote unquote, wasn't working, it actually was working. You are sleeping 6 hours and 38 minutes on average. So let's go back to that and build from that place of, what is it that's interrupting your sleep? Why are you misperceiving it?
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. We talk about these often on Untangle. When we keep things bottled up inside, it can start to impact our health mentally, emotionally, and physically. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, whatever it is. If this sounds like you, and it's a bit of all of us, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule and needs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now, over to Untangle.
How can we turn those things around?
Well, and I'm sure someone doesn't come to you unless they're feeling very fatigued during the day, right? So when you don't sleep, so if you're up during the night, whether it's for 2 hours, 5 hours, or 1 hour, if you wake up and you're feeling fatigued and you're at work and you're feeling like you can't focus, then it's a problem, right? Then it doesn't matter. How do you talk to your patients about this? And if it is so much about attitude and emotional response to what's happening, is, you talk about in your book, cognitive behavioral therapy and maybe mindfulness training. How does this all fit into how you work with your patients to reset them in terms of beliefs about this?
So I think about people's beliefs on a spectrum. There's a far left, a far right, and a middle. The far left is the individual who is so terrified about their sleep and their insomnia, not getting enough, not being able to function, that they are essentially handicapping themselves. And we've talked about that person. There's a person on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. She's a surgeon at the university hospital in your town, and she can go easily 38 hours without sleep, doing operations, rounding on her patients. She has a belief that, I like sleep, but if push comes to shove, I can easily go 36 hours. I need everybody to meet somewhere there in the middle. I don't want you to be terrified of not sleeping. I also don't want you to feel like you don't need it. So getting 3.5 to 4 hours a night, as the investment bankers always are out in San Francisco, and they're telling me, look, I get 4 hours of sleep. I get up, I do my triathlon training. I spend an hour with my kids at night. I'm at the office. Like, I'm fine. I feel great. Look at that. I'm killing it in the triathlon circuit. Yeah, you are. And you're 30 years old. And this pathway of just because you can do it, doesn't mean you should, is going to kill you early. It is not a safe, responsible way to live your life.
Why is it going to kill you early? Why?
You know, when you look at sleep deprivation over a long period of time, it has tremendous cardiovascular, cognitive side effects. So there are genes that allow people to do okay without a lot of sleep. But that is a very, very unhealthy way to live your life.
So let me ask you a question then. So there are lots of negative side effects with sleep deprivation, which relate to your cardiovascular health, your brain health, et cetera. There are equal side effects or more with medications. And there's a lot of linkages to dementia from both sleep deprivation and from taking the medications.
Correct.
So is the only way to solve our sleep problem to change our attitude about it? And of course, you have a list of sleep hygiene things, which I think people know, but it's really hard to kind of be perfect about that.
Think about sleep problems as a pie chart. I think 20% of people out there could fix their sleep problem by adjusting sleep hygiene. It's important. I mean, it's every article you read. It's anything that reporters want to talk about. How can we make our rooms dark? How can we make them cool? We don't eat caffeine before we go to bed. Like, we get all that stuff right now. And if you've probably been living under a rock. So let's not focus too much on that, because there's 80% of people who've done all that stuff. The blackout shades, earplugs right next to their bed, and yet they still struggle. I would say of the remaining 80%, a massive portion of those people are insomnia patients. And a lot of that has to be attitude and belief adjustment, or cognitive therapy, we often call it. You're absolutely right. Pills are not the solution. They want it to be. I mean, how easy is a pill? You just take it and poof, it's gone. Because these problems require work and commitment and sort of letting go of things. So sleep medications have their place, but not generally because you can't sleep. Because that's like saying, I went to lunch yesterday with some friends at this really awesome restaurant, and as they were ordering food, I just didn't feel that hungry. And then after, I was so upset that I didn't get to eat the meal with my friends. I went to my doctor and said, I got a problem with my appetite. Do you have any appetite stimulants I could just have in case I was ever in that situation where a meal was presented to me and I wasn't that hungry? I mean, the doctor would look at you like you have two heads. Of course not. Just don't eat. It's not a big deal. Like, so we don't have that attitude of Tuesday night, I got into bed at 11 o'clock, Dr. Winter, and it took me an hour to fall asleep. Maybe even two. Okay. Maybe you weren't sleepy. It's okay. Like, we don't talk about that. Just go to bed at two. Now, the key is get up on time, but go to bed at two. Your body's telling you not that sleepy. So go rest. And to your point, what else can we do besides drugs? I really don't like drugs. Patients love drugs. In fact, I saw a person 7 days ago in my clinic and said, let's do this. We had some ideas about some sleep hygiene, some meditation techniques, yada, yada. I swear to God, on my desk right now, there is a note from her because she called and said, is it okay if I take Lunesta?
Right.
So like the hour and a half we spent talking about this is vanished because of fear. Why did she call and ask if the doctor would allow me to take it? It's because she's scared. She's had a couple difficult nights since we've talked. And it's like, well, this isn't working. So I need something to make sure I sleep.
Yeah. And she doesn't feel well. She doesn't feel
well.
She wants a short-term solution.
What's interesting though is she doesn't feel well. But when you ask her questions about sleepiness, okay, you sleep 2 hours. Maybe I'm wrong. You're sleeping 2 hours at night and you have for the last 7 years. I've seen that before in hospitals. But I have a vision of what that looks like. Do you nap a lot? So what is that telling us? It's telling us, yeah, she doesn't feel well during the day, but she's not sleepy at all. Like, she is less sleepy than I am. I could easily fall asleep in the afternoon. Mm. So what does that mean? It means that she's fatigued, but she's not sleepy. And what happens, though, when people wake up and don't feel good, there are a lot of reasons why people feel fatigued. Depression, tick-borne illnesses, medication side effects, thyroid disorders, B12, vitamin D. I could go on forever. And the problem is when people wake up and don't feel good, they turn around and look over their back and they say, God, if I could have just slept better, if I hadn't had that 1 hour awakening during the night, I would feel so much better today. So now you are transforming an action into something very different. You are going to bed when it's all on the line. I've got to get better sleep or else I won't feel better. So can sort of dysfunctional sleep make you feel fatigued during the day? In addition to that fatigue, you're going to get significant sleepiness. And it makes sense. The patient who says, I don't sleep, well, maybe an hour a night. I've done this for the last 7 years. I'm not at all sleepy during the day. Just logically speaking, does that make sense to you that that's what would happen? And that's where you get the partner who gets this look on his or her face of, oh, thank God somebody else sees what I'm seeing. And that's very important. So it is meditation. Let's talk about sleep. When you go take a nap, when you go to sleep, what is your goal? Most people's goal is to get some sleep, feel good the next day. We want to make sure that for the insomnia patient, the goal is something they can control. Can't control if you fall asleep. You can control resting. And this is where your expertise comes in. There is wonderful research that says resting, not sleep, resting does probably 80 to 100% of what sleep does, depending on what parameter you're measuring. It's not wasted time. So the one sleep hygiene information piece that I really have fault with is this idea that if you get in bed and you don't fall asleep within 15 to 20 minutes, you need to get out and go do something else. Sure, you can do that if you want to, but you could also just stay in bed and relax. So I always ask patients, does it make you upset to be in bed, not asleep? If the answer is, oh, yes, it just drives me up a wall. It makes me so angry I can't sleep. Then, yeah, you probably should get up. So to me, get in bed, close your eyes, do some really good meditation, use a Muse. I love the Muse device. Make sure you're using that during the day so you can practice effective meditation and just meditate. And if you meditate, you're going to feel amazing the next day.
Yeah, it's so funny because the definition of mindfulness is being with the present moment without judgment. And that's exactly what you're saying. If you can get into bed and however you're feeling as you're trying to fall asleep, stop judging yourself.
I've never heard, but I'm just fun. I've never heard that definition before. That with judgment is incredibly important.
Well, because that's what you're saying, and that anxiety that people have and trying to control the moment and not thinking that resting or meditation could possibly be equal to the deep levels that you get to with sleep. You do talk about these different levels of sleep, like a light sleep, deep sleep, dream sleep. Why is all of that important? And I did want to ask you, it feels to me like you're more of a sleep therapist because it sounds like so much of what you're doing is counseling people on how to think differently about their sleep habits. Because once you've given them all of the sort of rules and tips and tools for how to sleep better, then you're left with, you have to shift how you think about how you sleep.
Absolutely. Well, you said a couple things there that are very important. The idea of changing your mindset about sleep is really important. I do feel like a therapist for a certain population of people who come here, for the 400-pound guy who cannot breathe and sleep at the same time, my therapy is directed towards, you've got to wear the CPAP. It will not only change your life, but it will save it. So everybody's got their thing. So to me, this idea of mindfulness and being in the moment is so important. What you really see is the psychological scarring difficult sleep has over a long period of time. None of the pills work. Doctors dismiss me. I've paid thousands of dollars for sleep studies that don't really help. So these people do need a kind of therapy. You understand that these people are really hurt by this condition. All I think about is this problem and ways to fix people, but it's a real thing. And what you often see too, is it becomes intermingled with their identity. So my identity is I'm a short man who is a neurologist and sleep specialist, father of three who likes music and art and just kind of being travel. That's how I construct my identity. And what you notice with insomnia is sometimes that kind of becomes your identity. You're the one person in the office who everybody knows, Phil can't sleep. He's been to 20 different sleep doctors and nobody can figure him out. And that's their thing. Yeah. And so it's a very delicate situation when you start to approach these things, because you're not just approaching a problem sometimes, you're approaching what makes that person special, how they view themselves. And so it gets very tangled up in there. So I like giving people practical solutions. I like people to understand that there is a tremendous amount of benefit in resting and meditation that I don't even claim to be an expert in.
Well, so if someone's going to sleep, so just getting down to sort of brass tacks here, because I understand that we have to change our mindset and there are a lot of behavioral things we have to change. I know for myself, I sometimes put on our meditation studio app, I just put rain sounds to go to sleep. And that is very soothing for me. And it takes my mind out of an anxious mode. If you had to pick your top five tips for sleeping better, I don't want to say for like curing insomnia, because I feel like
that's all part of it. It's all part of it.
Do you have like sort of a snapshot? Okay, awesome.
Yeah, I'll take these a little bit out of order based upon the direction we've gone today. I would say step one is, if you've heard this all before, you've read all the books, you've taken all the medications, it's okay to move towards seeing a sleep specialist. There's a substantial part of that pie of people who have undiagnosed sleep disorders that they're never going to fix on their own. If your legs are moving 838 times on average every night and you're not aware of it, until you take a medication for what's called periodic limb movement disorder, your sleep's never going to be better. So number one, if you're frustrated and not going anywhere, find a real medical sleep specialist and go see him or her, because you may need a little bit more than what you can do for yourself. Number two, I think that it's really important for us all to have a schedule. What you really find out is your brain does nothing accidentally. Your body is not accidental in any way. It's got a schedule. So if your wake sleep schedule is all over the place, then lots of things in your body are going to be all over the place. Tip number three would be, think beyond sleep when it comes to your schedule and sleep. Try to eat your meals at the same time every day. Every morning you wake up, you have a bagel and some orange juice, and you get outside and walk your dog. every day, all the same. So think about light, getting out, walking your dog outside, you get a flood of light. So now all of a sudden you're starting your day off with body movement as you walk your dog, a consistent meal with your bagel and orange juice, and light as you walk outside and walk the dog. So when we start getting our sleep schedule screwed up, our meals get screwed up, our exercise timing gets screwed up, our light exposure, our light minimization, they all get screwed up too. And that can be a real problem. When it comes to your bedtime, I want you to have a bedtime, but I want you to define your bedtime as the earliest you're allowed to try to sleep and not when you go to sleep. Meaning that if you've kind of come up with a schedule, if I go to bed at 11, I'm going to get up at 6:30. It gives me 7.5 hours of sleep. If you get in bed tonight at 11 o'clock and you don't feel sleepy, or at 10:45, you're so upset about something that happened at work today that you know going down the hall and getting in that bed, you're not going to fall asleep, then stay up. That is no different than you choosing to skip lunch because you just weren't that hungry that day. Number four, if you're taking a sleeping pill every night to sleep, stop. Talk to your doctor about it. Even if you feel like it's working, these pills, none of them were ever designed to be used long-term. It's an inappropriate use, not to mention drugs like melatonin. Oh, it's perfectly safe. It's natural. Yeah, I guess it is. But what is melatonin doing? It's syncing our sleep with our sun, basically. And when you take it, when you go to bed at night, you're essentially telling your brain, the sun's going down right now. So if you go to bed at 11 o'clock every night and take your melatonin, you're telling your brain the sun's going down at 11 o'clock. So what you often start doing with chronic melatonin use is just shifting your night later, which feels like, well, the melatonin worked initially. Now I take 20 milligrams. It doesn't seem to do much for me anymore. Yet you're still taking it, right? Yeah. Why? Because you're scared to not. I mean, it all kind of cycles around. So to me, pills are not appropriate when it comes to that kind of treatment. And I think the fifth thing to me would be, and it's kind of under number one, don't fear a sleep study. I mean, a lot of people, I think, would probably go see a sleep specialist, but oh my God, they're going to hook me up with wires and put me in a room where I can't sleep already. How could I ever sleep with a whole bunch of wires on my body? A, we don't have to do in-lab sleep studies as much as we used to. We can do little home sleep studies. And B, the amount of information from these things are incredible, so they can be very helpful. And that is a big first step in getting your sleep problems taken care of.
You are chock full of wisdom on this topic. I am really grateful that you've been able to be with us today. Thank you so much.
I'm thankful for what you do too. And like I said, the little tidbit of how you define mindfulness, which I've always sort of thought I was kind of messing around with on the periphery, that sentence I think will help a lot of my patients. That judgment is so important. Don't judge asleep. Judge how you feel at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when it's a nap opportunity is presented to yourself, and learn just to really appreciate being in bed while you're awake is not the end of the world. It's kind of a nice place to be.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Patricia. Anytime. I really appreciate the invitation. It was very kind of you.
Thanks so much to Chris for being with us today. I hope you'll sleep great tonight. You can get his book at all major booksellers. If you have a minute, would you give us a review or rating? It helps to get the word out. And if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to download Meditation Studio in the App Store and check out Muse at choosemuse.com. We'll see you next time.